Welcome to the Signals Podcast. Today, I would like to welcome Dr. Alistair Coburn, author of a large number of books on software development and the co-author of the Agile Manifesto. And I think that there is a new talk in your future that I wanted to talk to you just a little bit about that's coming up at the Antpickler Summit. What can you tell me about how the genius of how bureaucracies are genius in how we approach software design?
Yeah, I love this. This is so much clickbait, but it's too good to it's too good to pass up. Like we hate bureaucracies. And when I go, the genius of bureaucracies, everybody goes like, what? But it turns out that we have this like deep allergies to bureaucracy. Like we really know. Like the most hated word in all of like dealing with the bureaucracy is the phrase, not my job, right?
Right.
It's just like, it's like that terrifies you. Now the weird thing is, so here's the map that's weird and interesting. When we design software, we have actually designed a bureaucracy, and it doesn't matter if you're using functional programming or objects. I'm a dyed-in-the-wool objects guy. There are objects passing messages to each other. And this always strikes me as people on telephones calling each other or sending emails, right?
Sure.
Even functional, it's the same. Function, call, same. So here's where it gets interesting. We have been wrestling with this topic of coupling and cohesion since Larry Constantine first mentioned it in the 60s. And by the way, I have tried to track down his original data because he said,
okay,
I studied some programs and the ones that are easier to maintain are this, and I want to find his original data. It is nowhere. It was just like, there was no appendix. He just asserted it. And we all go, yeah, baby. Yeah, right. Got it. And then what the hell is it anyway? So then we've got all these things that try to help us wrap our head around this, like, what is this coupling and cohesion, right? We got things like the single responsibility principle. We have responsibility-driven design. We got domain-driven. We got all these things. And none of them ever give us a hint as to how we've done when we actually, like, so we make up a little package of code.
Right.
And how do we tell if we did it, right? So
right.
It turns out that not
sure.
My job is the answer. So you make
okay.
this little bureaucracy of these little things with telephones, right?
Yeah.
And one of them calls up the other and says, hey, you know, summarize all the transactions over the last month. And the other thing, he goes, not my job. Mm-hmm. Right. So that's your hint.
Yeah.
So it turns out that if we let people, do some good naming, like the name's there, and I'm going to go in the talk, I'm going to kind of like re-motivate Rebecca Wirfsprach's responsibility-driven design, mm-hmm. Kent Beckwith Cunningham's CRC cards. They're perfect. And if you bother to take the time just to write down what is the responsibility of this thing. Now I want
right.
to be clear, this works for mega subsystem breakdown. We're not talking like classes and objects anymore. You have a major subsystem and you're looking system and you're making for subsystems. And you say, this one's good for this, and this one's good for that. And the intention of this one is to handle this. Right? You've made already a little bureaucracy. You've already made a responsibility statement.
Right.
And then it turns out it's so natural for us to have somebody say, and I'm going to have it do that. And the other person goes, that's not his job. Right? And I taught a couple of people from the FBI object-oriented design once, a long time ago. And they, beginner class, totally new to objects. And they had this little subtle design, I mean, in the beginner class. And I go, how did you do that? What's it? And the one guy looks at this one object and he goes, that object has no need to know. And I went,
no need to know. Yeah.
That has no need to know. And I went, I can teach FBI guys object-oriented design all day long. They've got it. No need to know. No need to know. You have no need to know, right?
Yeah.
Give me the fifth transaction. You have no need to know, right? So it
Deep
turns
throat
out,
design.
deep throat. So it turns out we've got all these fabulous reflexes all through our bodies. And oh, by the way, we'll get to it, but LLMs are the same. They have, you don't need any coaching. You just tell the LLM, say, hey, treat this like a bureaucracy. Look at my design. It could be your .md files, could be anything. And say, just think about it as a bureaucracy and apply those horrible concepts. Not my job, and no need to know. And tell me what you see. And it'll find the violations like everywhere. So here's the weird thing about these talks.
Interesting.
This is old school. This is stuff that 30 years old, we were all teaching it. But fads and fashions and things layer on top of things,
Absolutely.
and something gets hidden in history. And I would have never written about it because, Rebecca Weersbrock's written 2 books on it and stuff. But I found this little twist that nobody had ever talked about, and it's the not my job, no need to know game. And so I said, okay, I have to bring this back out. Now, one last thing on it is all of the design techniques I'm aware of have no scent, have no gradient, no better, worse. There's no gradient. I used to do, CRC cards and would say, is this better than this? Is this better? Would you like this? What do you think about this? You do domain-driven design, it just says ubiquitous language. Well, what? Yeah, okay, but that doesn't tell me, is this better? What are the maintenance characteristics of this versus that, right? I don't know. So not my job and no need to know give you a gradient, right? And so you can really say pretty quickly, this one's probably better for maintenance purposes than that one. Boom, like that. So the talk is basically, I can't spend too much remotivating, but kind of like restarting the conversation. What is design? Design to me is literally deciding where to put a line of code. Like, you know what the line of code is? You know what the line of code is? Let's say someone hits the buy button, right? Click, double click, whatever. We know we're going to go do some buying stuff. That's not a mystery. The mystery is, do I put it here? Do I put it here? And that is an act of design. And there
Absolutely.
are like few to no guides as to how to make that decision. And guess what? So that's what the talk's about.
That's fantastic. And like you said, it's some older concepts, but it's like a new terminology, a new framing of the concept in a way that I think will resonate with people a lot.
Yeah, so here's what's interesting. Okay, so a lot of people are older and they know this stuff. They've been through it, at least they read the book, at least they heard the
Yeah, sure.
meme, right? A lot of people are younger, got no clue about it. Like 30 years ago, not a word for 30 years, they got no idea. So I have to plan for both people in the audience.
Yes, always.
But the new people who maybe heard the word but know nothing, so I have to kind of bring them along. And the older people who kind of know it, but as you say, it's a new framing. So even though I'll go through some standard sorts of examples, what I want people is just to hear the phrase in their head over and over again. Not my job, no need to know. Not my job, no need to know. Is it the job? Is it not the job? All through all standard stand, and I found little examples in various places in my writings and other places. Well, there's a little subtext, a little tiny text that says, does this and doesn't do that. So we already have it right there. And so the talk is like, I'm going to warm people up and I just want them to hear the rhythm of not my job, not my job, not my job. Right. And then final note, I've been playing with a new problem, and everybody says do a library or something. Those are boring. So I had to do a role-playing game, a little D&D. Got to go something different. Arbitrary complex. And I asked in one of the designs, I'm competing different designs. And I asked it to make CRC cards, including not my job. And so the LLM produced a very lovely little packet there, name, key responsibility, sort of signature kinds of things. And at the bottom, not my job to da 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 dee, da 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 da. So now the LLM has got the way to catch design drift. When you design, designs aren't static. You move them
Nope, no,
around.
of course not.
You push the code here, you push the code there. And suddenly this object that was kind of a dead object, suddenly it's got like transactional guarantee responsibilities that just kind of drifted into it when you weren't looking. And these phrases for the LLMs help it to catch design drift, that it's now what I call out of alignment. I'll talk about the alignment, responsibility alignment test. You have to have a responsibility set. So it's got a name. Let's call it a transfer transaction, right? The bank account transfer. It's a tra What do we know about a transfer? You don't know anything from the name. Well, okay, so it knows the two parties and how much. Like, that's nothing. But if it's got the responsibility to guarantee closure of the transaction, whoa, this is different. And people don't document that. So the name could drift, the responsibility could drift, the method signatures can drift. How do you know if they've drifted? And you never know which one's wrong. Because it could be that the name changed and you didn't think about it
Yeah,
and you
sure.
need a new name, right? So I'll talk about that just a little bit. So it's cool because it's old stuff, but as you say, with the light coming in from a different, framing it in a different way. And what I love, all my techniques, it's stupid simple. It's so simple. And it's
Absolutely.
not, it doesn't give you brilliant designs, but it gets you into a generally safe space.
You know, one of the things that I find is giving people a framework for decision making empowers them.
And this thing about it being so intuitive is whack, because we did an experiment in the way back days. In those days, in the late 90s, the standard wisdom in academia was you can't teach undergraduates design until they've been programming in C++ for 2 years. And I went, they couldn't handle the concepts of design. And I went, stop. You mean for 2 years they've been putting code, no idea where, and after 2 years gonna try to undo that and teach? No. So
No.
they gave me as a challenge a group of freshman students. This was in Berkeley. This was late 90s, so before too much of the internet, like everybody codes it. But they were Berkeley students. Okay, they're smart. But they knew nothing. And I wasn't allowed to coach them. And I gave them a design problem, the classical coffee machine. I gave them requirements. I changed requirements and I changed requirements, right? And it was fascinating to me. They picked it up like this. And they came up. My favorite moment in that whole thing was there's some guy, of course, who decided he was the middleman and he would like talk to this object and this object and this object. And finally, one of the ladies in the group goes, can't you just introduce us to each other and then let us talk to each other directly? I was like, boom, right? So that's how fast we get it, right? We know it, right? Right away. So yeah, it's fun. Honestly, I feel a bit weird because that material is sold. And then I get excited. Like, I wasn't even going to write the book or anything. I go, well, I just, for completeness, I've got this in my kit bag. I want to get it out. But then as we started working with LLMs, oh my God, it works fabulously with the LLM. So now I'm doubling down. Turns out that good designs are more important for LLMs than they are for people, because it'll
Yeah,
generate,
absolutely.
2 million lines of code before you can turn around, and then you're going to ask it to make a change. And it's got to go reread the 2 million lines of code and figure out what, right? So anyway, I
Turns out
burbled
that's
really
expensive.
fast there. I hope the people in Germany, I promise I'll talk slower in the actual talk.
It's all good. So one of the things that you have introduced into the world as far as design is hexagonal architecture. So how would you say that something like hexagonal architecture plays with this new way of thinking about design?
I did in my D&D game, right? So the first thing I do is I say, okay, we got two people, they're on the same square, one has a knife, stab, right? You just do the simplest thing. And then we just did a strength, right? If strength A greater than strength B. And I found in the code that right there in the stab method, it said if, A is greater than B, print a print string. And I go, what the heck is the stab function, knowing what language, the what No need to know, but no need to know, buddy. Not
your job,
right? So you
Right.
start doing this, and you get to this place with, why does the app know that we're using an SQL server? What? Not your job. No need to know, right? So you start pushing this thing, and you just apply no need to know, and these things we've been arguing about forever, like keep the leakage. You know, why does the screen with the button know the business rule associated with the what? So the point is, the hexagonal architecture is totally derived from no need to know, not my job.
Sure.
And it's partitioning. You get at the macro level, right? It's a macro level partitioning. And so we in hexagonal architecture, for those who know, if you don't, go look it up. You have a system, and here's the hardest thing that took us to draw. You have a system and you have a database. Now you treat them both like they're both off the shelf COTS, commercial off the shelf things. You're not allowed to touch a single line of code, but you may want to swap the database, right?
Right.
So whose job is it to know the interface of the other? The answer is neither.
Neither.
Either. No, not my job. No need to know. Don't do that. Don't go there. Each of them is tightly wrapped, perfectly owned by different teams. So what you have to do is add some glue code, the adapter, whose job it is to know both interfaces and do that thing, right? So we get from no need to know, we get exactly why that, right? That partitioning, it's super simple to describe. Very clear, and that's the not my job in action. That was fun to redirect.
That's awesome. So when you think about how software projects are developing, and I know you talk to a lot of people, I look back at Agile Manifesto, how we started into Agile, how some of the different methodologies that are happening right now, where do you see the future of methodology going? And because I think of methodology and the design is in some ways hand in hand. Yeah, they're two completely different things, but the way we approach software design and often happens based upon methodology we're using to build the software in the first place. Because when you don't have time to sit and think and actually take the concept of not my job and no need to know and build a framework from that that works for us, when we don't have the time to make those leaps because of the way we're approaching software, we run into problems. Agile helped with a lot of things. Where do you think we are today? Is Agile still the best approach? Have you changed your thinking on this?
So this is really, well, first of all, normally I never prognosticate about the future because I'm just so bad at it. Like, I thought it was a bad idea to write a manifesto. So like, don't look to me for, and look at my stock portfolio. Just don't look to me for notes about the
fair enough
future. However, the methodology, and you've got two questions in there. One is working with agents in general, and the other is methodology. So as of 6 months ago, I was on record as saying there was so much dust in the air that there was no shape even forming. Like my official position was you can't take an official position because there's just too much. There was nothing. There were not even any patterns. So I do experiments and I talk to people and I read the internet. They're looking for some patterns, and some patterns are showing up. And methodologies is now a topic again. So methodology for me is the set of conventions the team agrees to follow. Set, like if you're going to play volleyball on Thursday, that's part of your methodology, it's part of the convention, right? Whatever, casual Friday. These are not all process things. These are social conventions, and they drift over time. And I got done with that topic entirely shortly after Crystal Clear, the book, came out. So by 2008, 2009, I just said this, no more, there's nothing there for me. It's got limited impact. And when I came up with the Heart of Agile, which is just the four words, like you see on my coffee mug, collaborate, deliver, reflect, and improve. With those four words, you can't get everything. And you get much more interesting, much more powerful, let's say, interventions. So I stopped doing any methodology consulting for like since 2009 and 2015. Suddenly it's a hot topic because we have a whole bunch of new players on the team that we don't understand. We don't understand them. That's the first thing. So I'm going like, okay, so our allocation of responsibilities, our processes, you know, our conventions, it's all It's all new. It's all new. We're back in the game. And so the first part to answer your question with respect to methodologies, turns out that all the old software engineering practices, the good ones, not the bad ones like waterfall, but the good ones, they're all more relevant, more important with LLMs than they are for people because they move so fast. And so we're talking that test first, doesn't have to be full test, red, green, refactor, but writing the test at the same time as you write the code, micro incremental development, really small increments, good naming, clean modularization, hexagonal architecture shows up as a absolutely core concept inside of their use cases. And here's a little note for people. I go use case, then I say split it into stories, and then I say for each story, I ask the LLM expand that back into a use case. And because a user's story is missing too much info, you ask it to put it back in a use case. Now you get actually a decent spec to work from. So now we have these like micro use cases. That's cool. All of that testing, regression tests, all of that is even more important than before because it's running unsupervised super fast. So that's kind of interesting to watch. Now, the next part is we've got a colleague with a weird personality. And I had to give a lecture to high school students, and I said, an agent's really like a high school student, a very smart high school student, and you just don't know. They just show up differently every day. You know, they could be really hard workers, they could be really lazy. My example is you tell it to buy or build something, and it finds it can steal it from a neighbor's living room, so it shows up, you know, with the television set under its arm. And you, why'd you do that? Well, that was the path of least resistance. It was just right there. And you, I thought I told you not to steal. Yeah, my bad. You know, I mean, it's like that. And so how do you know it's going to do, or how do you know it's going to crawl through a hole in the fence that you didn't think about saying, don't crawl through that hole in that fence. So it's this omniscient guru sitting on a far mountaintop, and we type on our little teletypey fingers to our far guru that, by the way, speaks to all cultures, all civilizations in the entire universe in whatever form is. And it doesn't know how to speak to us because we're dot. Culturally, we're dot. And so it'll say and do things that are not in our culture and goes, oh, I didn't know that part about your culture. My bad. You know? So that's like trying to find this, and it's got this weird, I don't use the term hallucination anymore. You know, it's got a probability that it follows a probability pathway. But I like high school students. So my new way of describing software development in the current moment, which is like June 2020s, is, and we have agents, right? Okay, good. 30 high school students show up on your doorstep in the morning asking what to do. You give them all written instructions and they run off and do. How do you organize 30 high school students so you get approximately what you want? And some of them are lazy and some are good and some are stealing television sets. Okay, so that's part one, but the bad part is you get a brand new set of 30 high school students every morning. So now make this work. Where did they go? Yeah, and so that's my mental model for what we're up against.
That
And
really makes sense, though.
yeah, and so part of it is all that stuff about specs, nano increments, six, all the people checking on people, run the tests, put in some hooks, check the Git, make sure they didn't delete the tests, as somebody put it, right? It was, oh, they just changed all the tests so they all pass. Ken Beck said it deleted 54 of my tests, right? That's the stealing stuff from the living room, you know, aspect. And even though it says don't do that, oh yeah, sorry, I did that. So that's where we are. It's a big
Yeah,
topic. It's a big
it
topic.
is.
Methodology is interesting again. And everybody's got their opinions on how to make it work. And I think Henrik Knieberg gave a talk the other day. His group seems to have found a way that makes it work for them. And a couple of people have got it, and other people are really busy selling .md files. Use my skill set. And I'm still
Yes,
trying
for
to
sure.
make it do hexagonal architecture and walking skeleton in a repeatable way. Like I take a simple problem with four apps. I try to make it work. I fix up the MD. I start over. It's we're not there.
It's so From your perspective, would you say that the current state of software development is an incremental improvement over what we had before, or is it light years beyond what we had
Oh, it's
10
very
years ago?
different. It's very different because you've got 30 super brilliant high school students stealing television sets. It's all bets are off. What's actually going to happen? It's in that sense, it's exciting. I mean, if it's weird for me, I'm picking up this topic. I worked in methodology for like 15 or 18 years, and I kind of dropped it for another 15 or 18 years, and now it's popped back up. And it's not like I'm going to write a methodology, but nonetheless, what are the conventions? What are the rules? What are the processes? So that's interesting. Yeah, it's and let's see, what was I going to say about AI in general? My bit summary on the human side is the key word is cognitive overload. And you'll find this everywhere. Cognitive is the new buzzword, right? Cognitive debt, cognitive overload, intention debt, blah, 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 all this. And the way I summarize it is your job as a human is to find the error. If all the bits are working, fine, you just ship it. But there's an error in there. But unfortunately, you just made 20,000 decisions under your nose in the last 10 minutes. And your job is to find the error. So cognitive overload and just that's the hot topic. How are we going to slow it down enough that we can find the error? That's our ultimate job because we get responsibility
Yeah,
for it.
absolutely.
Yeah, the high school students are all underage. They don't care.
It's like at the end of the day, we still have to file our paperwork and ship the thing and make sure that
Well,
it
so
works.
here's where I got to that. I mean, like I get overloaded in a heartbeat. Like I really can't do this. So I was given by a friend the assignment, and I encourage everybody to take this on. You're gonna write all the software for bowling alley, right? So this is you've got the notepad where you check in, and you got the lanes manager that allocates lanes, and you do payments. The thing that front desk thing. And you've got the thing with the pins that take them up and down, and those, like what? And you got the thing at the lane head where you got the four people and the bowling team, right? And you still have some humans in there, probably the actual owner. Okay, so write me that system. Well, this isn't hard. The LLM can do it for you one shot. The problem is you don't know what business you just created, right? So I've been working on this because one app is easy, four apps is hard. Walking skeleton on hexagonal architecture and So what I did was I started writing a use case. Well, use cases are tedious by today's standards, so I asked it to write the use case, and it went bloop, and I said, well, I don't have the mental bandwidth right now to find the error in that use case. So I said, slice it into 20 stories. So I did that bloop. And I stared at those and I go, I'm actually not going to find the error. I'm sure there's an error, but I can't see it. I got 20 stories. My brain won't do that. So I said, code up a couple of the stories. I did the blip. And then I said, I'm lost. I'm not going to read all. I have no idea what's going on. So I said, write me a mega use case to show me the whole thing. And blip. And I go, I give up. I have no idea. I don't know what business I have. I'm the owner. I just literally have no idea what business I'm. And then I asked a friend of mine. I was telling him about this, and he uses swarms of agents. And he wrote me the next day. He says, "Yeah, I did it, no problem." I go, "You don't know what business you just implemented, and I don't know what business I just implemented, and they're not the same business.
No,
This
right.
is the problem. We don't know what we just got, right?"
Right, absolutely.
So, cognitive overload. That's where we are. Okay, about maybe do you have one more question?
Fantastic. No. Yeah, so I wanted to see if is there one big message you want to give the audience as a takeaway, to kind of summarize what we've been talking about.
Well, I think the message is those responsibility statements were never enforced by the tools, so nobody wrote them. But I'm now moving into the LLM world, and the LLMs can do this just fine. So when you ask it, because you don't have to do the writing, you could tune it, but you don't have to do the writing. Ask it to partition by responsibilities, maintain, the responsibility statement, add the not my job, no need to know. It can do all of that sweet. You can get the CRC cards in your .md files, you know. You can detect design drift. So it's like put this thought back on the table. Responsibility statements plus not my job equals not only good for humans who aren't so good at applying it, but they're really good for LLMs that are good for applying it. So strangely, what I thought was like just a piece of leftover, you know, in my attic, right, turns out to be really relevant in today's situation. And that's kind of cool and why I'm then talking about it.
Right. Well, fantastic. Hey, thank you so much for joining me today. Really appreciated the conversation. And I would encourage everyone who's watching to go ahead and check out Invictler Summit and be sure to follow along
and
on this podcast.
An unabashed ad for the book, right? So there's actually, I wrote the book first.
Please? Oh, yes, please.
And I don't have a...
fantastic, yes.
Give me 1 second.
Do you have a copy? Show it off.
Strangely, see right there.
Fantastic.
Right? Simplifying software design, the
yes.
genius of bureaucracies are not my job, sharpens your designs, with a picture of our man in the bureaucracy caught in the cogwheels.
Caught in the cogwheels. Lovely.
Caught in the cogwheels. All right. Thank you so much.
Awesome. Thank you so much.